Okay, welcome back, everybody. I hope you got the bit of nourishment and connection that you needed for the break. I'm going to come back again for our next panel. I don't know how many of you all have noticed, but for me, in the last couple of years, I've noticed that the New York Times has been a wealth of connections for recent science in healthcare. And just a few days ago, one of the headlines in their health section read, "Told to eat its vegetables, America orders fries." And I don't know how many of you all saw this, this article, but it was the perfect lead-in for this discussion. And, you know, they highlighted a few aspects of nutrition in this article, and I think the thing that sparked it was a recent Centers for Disease Control research study, the National Survey, and even though the current best understood recommendations are to eat 5 to 9 servings of vegetables and fruit a day, less than 25% of the adult population eats 3 or more servings of vegetables a day. And, you know, it's interesting, it's both surprising on the one hand to have the knowledge and the understanding that we do have already about the value of a wide range of plants in our diet, to realize that it's so difficult on a behavioral basis regularly to act this out. Is to realize how difficult so much of our job is in trying to communicate this in whatever setting we're in, whether it's educational, advocacy, or in direct clinical care. There were a couple quotes in this article from an industry analyst who worked for a marketing company. And one of them was, "Before we want health, we want taste, we want convenience, and we want low cost." And you know, you hit on a key part of this. There's another quote from him that I think gets at the heart of what we wanted to get at in this panel today. And he said, "There is nothing you can say that will get people to eat more veggies." And it's an interesting point because, you know, despite what we know about the health of, or the aspects of what we eat and how it contributes to our health, despite we know the basics about the science of nutrition, it's really difficult to instill change by talking about it. You know, and the science is really, really well understood, and it's been distilled as far as a simple phrase from Michael Pollan, which is eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Most of us know this really well, but acting out is quite difficult. So we've known this long enough, and we've known that saying it actually has clearly not worked, because we've seen this rise in so much of our nutrition-related or absence of adequate nutrition-related disease in the adult population and the pediatric population. Obesity, diabetes, things we've heard about already today. So today's panel, while we may hear some of the underlying epidemiology and aspects of the problem, today's panel is geared towards how do we creatively address this problem? How do we move beyond saying there's a problem, saying what to do, to acting it out, to help to instill the behavior change? So, we have a fantastic panel of people today, and I'm going to give you a brief introduction to each of them ahead of time, so we won't break it up and do some separately at each time. First, the speaker is going to be Stacy Antine. Stacy is a registered dietitian with a Master's of Science in Food and Nutrition. She's the founder and CEO of Health Farm USA, which is based in northern New Jersey and now in New York State. She has over 20 years of experience as a nutrition counselor, as well as work in the PR industry. And Health Farm USA is a leader in a unique style of hands-on, healthy lifestyle education where children learn by direct involvement in growing and harvesting and cooking fresh food. And Stacy's work has been profiled on CNN and the Rachel Ray Show and in numerous magazines as well. Our second presenter is going to be Oscar Guardado. And Oscar's a bilingual health educator and the director of the Nutrition and Wellness Program at the Marin County Department of Health and Human Services. He was a former health education director at Marin Community Clinic, and he's also a former public health instructor at Universidad de Salvador. And finally, our last panelist is going to be Dr. Daphne Miller. And Dr. Miller is a family physician and author who practices the integrative family medical care here in San Francisco. She lectures on nutrition and integrative medicine locally and nationally. And most recently, her book, which just came out in this last year, I believe, a couple years ago already, is called The Jungle Effect. And it's a fascinating chronicle of her travels and discoveries of nutritional patterns that are associated with specific regions in the world that are known for low incidences of particular diseases. And Dr. Miller is very active in the slow food movement and in nutrition education broadly. So we're going to start with Tracy, and we'll move on from there. And then at the end, we're going to do the same thing about questions. So while everybody is presenting, if you think of questions, write them down, and we'll collect them at the end.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to know that this is not a typical audience for me. Usually when I have 300 people in the room, they stay survive. So I'm a little bit of an elementary school student myself. I just want to thank everyone. It's been such an exciting conference, and especially Larry, Dr. Rosen, who brings me along to these unbelievable events. And I just learn, and I think, you know, the best thing is you just keep learning and you keep spreading the word. So it's such an exciting place to be. I wanted to just tell you about Health Fun, and I'll go into things that you can put into practice as well. But Health Fun is, empowers children and their families, and it's really important to include the families, to lead energetic lives by eating naturally nutritious foods on an authentic farm experience. So what we're doing, I'll talk about some work that we're doing in schools, but we are on farms. We're on family farms, and which is pretty exciting because we've talked about schools, but I believe the family farms are not, you know, they're being sold to condos, and it's a really good opportunity for kids to be learning about educating through farms as opposed to sitting on a hayride and cooking for pumpkins and eating donuts. So I come at it from I'm a nutritionist, so I really come at this as, you know, nutrients, but, you know, what I realized pretty quickly is kids and families, you know, they, as a nutritionist, they put, you know, typically calories, fat, and you guys have all heard about it, but we eat food, so that's kind of why I'm coming at it. And also, it's just, you know, we're still removed from food. So that it's really important to get back to growing your own food and understanding the value of the food as opposed to eating nutrients and eating calories and fats, because I think we're a diet-obsessed society. I really believe in this country nutrition education is either it doesn't exist or it's antiquated. So it needs to change, and that's really what we're doing. So, again, environmental, I mean, we're on a farm, it's just all natural progression to this, it's research-based, we talk about animal stewardship, it's fun, because as you know, if kids don't think it's fun, they're not coming back. And in the past 5 years since we've had our farm, we've influenced over 30,000 kids. So basically, why did I even do this, and why is it even important? As you know, food is making us sick. It's the first generation of kids that aren't outliving their parents because of lifestyle. And I'm not going to go over the statistics, but for me, when I sat in a room and I saw that, I was like, are you kidding me? It made me really angry. And then through my dietetic rotation, that's when I was seeing what was happening to kids. They were getting weighed in. They were sitting in front of food models. And I was like, you know, basically I was like, this is wrong. This is wrong, and it needs to change. And that really changed my whole life because I never worked with kids before I came out of the corporate world. And, you know, a lot of my friends and my family, they're like, you're what? You're going to work with kids? You're going to work on a farm? You're going to grow vegetables? So anyway, things change, and always for the better. So we are making a difference, and I want you to hear from the kids about, you know, this is Rachel, who before she came to our farm, she wouldn't touch the worm. They're kind of weird and squiggly and gross because her mother thinks that too, you know. But anyway, so Rachel will tell you that, you know, she's enjoying learning the difference between artificial and natural foods. She added, you have to eat healthy when you're a child so you can be healthy when you're a grown up. I mean, that's a pretty basic concept, but it's so important. This is a classic, you know, my mom put A1 steak sauce on the table for dinner and I started to read the ingredients and found that high fructose corn syrup was in it. And she asked, what should I do? And he was like, well, throw it out. We're not going to eat it, are we? We also do assemblies all over the country. So thank you for coming to my school, for you changed my life. Before I came, I was tired, I didn't want to go outside. Now all I want to do is eat healthy foods and stay place, so go out there to other countries and speak and change those kids' lives. And it's so hilarious. And then basically, you know, health on you inspired me to start being strong and healthy and also not to be afraid to eat healthy food. I mean, I feel like it's so weird. Like, we're in the garden and the kids are afraid to touch a Brussels sprout where they're not afraid to eat a neon green yogurt. And I'm like, what kind of generation are we raising? Really, to me, yogurt is scary. But I mean, to them, that's totally natural food. So basically, the team we have is nutritionists. And I want to say there's a lot of young people, nursing students in the room. And I mean, I really believe they're the key to success, you know, with the kids. Because the truth is that the nutritionists that we're working with, our most successful, you know, training ground is our students. We have contracts with a lot of the different universities, and we're training dietitians through their community rotations, and they're starting to see that dietitians don't cook. And they really, I mean, we send them off to the garden, they can't choose the rest of the vegetables. So, I mean, we can't just assume people know what a Brussels sprout looks like. I mean, it is kind of a funny plant, but I mean, if you've ever saw it and you just bought it in a supermarket, you don't really know what the plant looks like. So, anyway, as you can imagine, I'm going to say this quick clip on the racial ratio. I don't know about you guys, but I am so tired of seeing obesity in the news. I am sick of it. I think that you just keep putting it out there that people are fat and they just keep getting fatter. So, I mean, let's put it out in the universe that there are people out there that are doing amazing things and there's lots of people in the room doing it. And let's talk about what they're doing so that we can lead by example and people can find out where they can get help, because it doesn't have to be, you know, so fatalistic. So I just want to show you the things you can see.
A healthy eating. You guys are gonna love this story. This, wow, really cool. Check it out. Watch it.
You guys excited to be back in the garden?
Yeah.
What a great idea. Teach kids all about nutrition and healthy eating by letting them grow their own fruits and vegetables. It's the mission of Health Barn USA, and it's mission accomplished.
What makes Health Barn different is the kids are naturally growing their own vegetables. One of the creative ways for which kids can actually be excited about these vegetables.
What we can do is pick a Brussels sprout and then eat it. Okay. So put the little on top.
But it's not all work and no play here. These kids learn healthy eating habits from fun games at Health Barn's own grocery store.
My favorite game is the supermarket side kids, where they actually learn about reading labels.
Now, we're going to start out with something fairly simple. What is it?
Oh! And after 100 days, everyone gets a chance to sample the fruits of their labor.
Our favorite part of the day is where we actually come together as a family and we make a meal.
Are you all good with your
lunch? Yeah!
Good with your lunch? Yeah!
Because I see Brussels sprout, I'm now eating healthy at home than I did.
Okay, so she's a such a picky eater.
Okay, so big picture. I, you know, here I was doing my dietetic work, and I thought I was going to be faced with, like, the obese nation. Instead, I'm like a good academic of picky eaters. And picky eaters is the new code word for I only eat chicken nuggets, pizza, and pasta with butter. I mean, that's it. This is what we're living. This is the world we're living in. And I look at the kid and I say, don't eat anything. And I look at the mom and I said, come on. I mean, the kid's eating something. It's certainly not eating. I mean, it's unbelievable. These kids are like super sized and the parents are like, they really don't eat anything. And I was like, I bet they're eating chicken nuggets. So anyway, I'm literally, parents are terrorized. I was laughing when David said that because I did see that article about the vegetables. I'm living with hysterical parents that are totally terrified because their child won't eat a vegetable. It's like hysteria. I mean, it's a whole diet. It's a balanced diet. So, I mean, we're totally losing sight. I think we're obsessed. I mean, you're not going to see, it's not about Doritos versus, you know, string beans. It's to get rid of the Doritos and eat a balanced diet. So this is what I face every day. I'm faced with this. I'm faced with parents who are tired of the battle. They can eat separately because they can't deal with it. They don't like to cook. No one likes to cook anymore. And the family's completely overscheduled with non-family activities. So, you know, mom's at the gym, dad's doing his thing, the kids in soccer, no one's doing things together. They're not hiking together, they're not doing anything as a family. Not only is it not only doing activities, they're not eating together as a family. Health professionals need to be more proactive. And then this is my big thing, like scaffolding. I don't know if you've ever seen this quote by him, but I use it with the children. They think it's hysterical. Exercise is the king, and nutrition is the queen. And in a kingdom, you need both. You can't have one without the other. And it's very simple, and it's just so important, because you can have kids that are stupid. Most parents put them in every activity, because I know overweight kids, they'll have them in 5 different activities, but they're still eating Dunkin' Donuts. And that is not healthy. And I have seen plenty of kids that are thin, that are incredibly active, and they have high cholesterol based on their diet. So their diet has to change. It's the hardest thing to change, but in the end, it is the one thing that will be the most impact for their long-term health. The big thing at Health Farm, no yuck, okay? I'm faced with this, ew, yuck, gross. So there is no such thing as ew, yuck, gross. Those are 4-letter words. We do the thumbs up if we like it, thumbs to the side, or thumbs down, and that's our signal. Like, that's what we do. We do it at home. It's a lot more easier to deal with kids that way. And then there's also the 7 healthy habits. These are 7 healthy habits that we just need to make sure that they're doing. I can tell you that it's all positive, right? Even breakfast, I mean, it's such an usual thing, but I mean, it's so difficult. Getting a good night's sleep, I mean, I don't know about you, but Ambien's like the 2nd largest drug prescribed in the country. So parents aren't sleeping, kids aren't sleeping, and kids are not sleeping. They're stressed out. They have siblings in their rooms, pets in their rooms. They have bad dreams. I mean, people don't talk about sleep with these kids, but if you start getting them to talk about it, it's something that's really a problem. And it also leads to weight gain. It's yo-yoing. It's the stress. Family meals, as you all know, we talk about blessing, blocking our teeth, but also recycle. So we've added recycle. And we only had 5. And then the kids told me we need 2 more. So now we have 7, which is a new thing for us. And recycle is a big thing. And that is really important because I'm able to teach nutrition with composting. Because they understand that if you're going to put those bogus that can compost. Okay, so the more that we cook and the more fresh fruits and vegetables that go into that soil that makes our healthy plants that healthy people eat, they totally get it. And now we're doing it at assemblies where we have a composting and we're taking it back to the farm. And so this is a really good way of teaching nutrition because they're starting to get, like, okay, what I eat is what's going to go into that soil and that's going to go into the plants, and it's a whole cycle. So it's a clever way to teach nutrition because they actually really care about the environment. I'm just going to talk about our big concept of natural versus artificial. This is the concept to teach every kid, whether it's a workshop, an assembly, or a kid coming through at any one of our programs, is the ingredients, right? So you see nature, anything that comes from nature, you get it. Anything that comes from a factory, you need to be a real supermarket spy and read those ingredients. And if you can't pronounce them or if they live longer than 5, it's probably not a natural product. And they're really, it's as simple as that. It's really that simple. And parents, I had a mother that was a PhD in psychology, and the whole family was a health farm. And I said, well, what do you think, who does the shop? And she said, I do. I said, do you ever read the list on the ingredients of the stuff you're reading? Oh, no, I can't. It's good list. They're so wrong. I hope people just didn't have to buy it because it's so wrong that you can't read it. Oh, I never really thought about that. So anyway, the most important thing you have to ask the parents, do they eat a variety of vegetables? I get so many parents, the kids don't eat vegetables. I'm like, well, do you? They're like, no, I never liked vegetables as a kid. So, I mean, you know, if you don't like vegetables, and then I'm like, well, you're sitting down to vegetables, you're not eating, but you expect the kid to do it. So, I mean, that's a real funny conversation. Do they like to cook? Are they serious about food? Do you exercise daily? You know, how do you reinforce healthy behaviors? If you do well on a test, are you going to Dairy Queen? Like, what is going on? Oh, they went for their doctor visit and they had a great visit, or did they go to Dunkin' Donuts afterward? I mean, this is not this type of behavior we want to reinforce. Do they plan, you know, if you know ahead of time, meal planning is a huge issue. And then just real world tips, I'm just going to flip through this and you'll be able to download the presentation with all the stuff in it. But you got to keep it positive and you got to keep it fun. And I think that's why Healthline is so successful, is we make it really fun. We basically took nutrition, what I learned, and we just turned it on its head. And everything that has been trained, like the rhythm, the food models, like none of it. It just doesn't exist there. And it's like they're learning because it's experiential and they're having a great time. And I'm learning too. The other, this is a really funny story. We started growing sweet potatoes. And this is the first year we grew sweet potatoes. And I, now again, I told you, I live in Manhattan, the farm is 40 minutes out. So this is 5 years I've become an avid gardener. So I planted sweet potatoes, I was all excited, but I never harvested before. So we go down this week. And we're down there, and I'm like, you know, I'm just as excited as they are. And they're like, well, how do you do it? And I said, I don't know. We're going to just check it out. They're like, but you work here. You're supposed to know how it's done. I'm like, I have no idea. And out come these giant sweet potatoes. We harvested this huge bucket. We ran out. We cooked with it. They were so excited. They were showing their parents. I sort of thought it was like gold. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's just so exciting to see them and have their experience. So anyway, and grow food, make your veggies come, you know, crunchy. Parents tend to overcook their vegetables. Go for whole grains. Go light on the drinks. Serving size matters. Positive peer pressure is a big thing. You know, you hear it's easier in California. I always said if I lived in California, my life would be so much easier. Everything tastes so good and I look so good. But you know, you have to be careful who you hang out with, basically, even on the food front. Family meal time should be fun, introduce new foods and have patience. And, you know, the big message for everybody is, you know, it's not a sprint, it's more like a marathon. You're living with these people for the rest of your lives. And, you know, enjoy the adventure. So I just want to say that anybody in the room that is really inspired by today's conversation and they work with kids or they want to work with kids, you really should ask today because you don't have time for everything that's going on this planet. It's really, if you feel passionate like I do, you need to get out there. Okay, thank you so much.
This is the first one. Good afternoon. It's a great honor to be here with you to share the work that we're doing in our community. My office is located at the health department in public health, but I like to say, and I'm proud to say, that I work for the community, I work for the people in the community. As we said before, by the obesity epidemic. And one popular approach has been nutrition education at the school site. And we have been doing that. And we have been very successful doing that in our community. The community we work in is a canal neighborhood in the San Rafael City in California. We have been working in two big schools, elementary schools, from the canal neighborhood. However, we have been very successful. We also, the work that we've been doing, the nutrition education has been inserted in the curriculum. And we also have garden-based nutrition education. We have gardens at both schools. But there was, in the kids were learning a lot of stuff about nutrition, a lot of healthy habits. However, there was one piece missing. Children were not supported probably at home. The healthy habits that were that they were learning at school, they probably wasn't supported at home, in the outside. So that mission piece was the parent education, parent outreach. 2 years ago, we started to notice this piece and to put it in place. So the mission piece was the parent. And we have very good outcome from the children, but we wanted more. As you know, parents are a strong influence on the children's behavior, on their life. And a nutrition education plan without considering parents was incomplete. So we decided to bring this on board. Of course, there are other important pieces in this puzzle, right? Such as dental health issues, housing, as you know, safety, food insecurity, social justice, health equity, immigration, and more other pieces that are important to put together if we want to have a real impact in the behavior of the healthy behavior. We find those pieces probably not a problem. What is hard sometimes is to link them together, those pieces. That's the challenge. I want to introduce a concept. This is a food environment concept. This has helped us a lot to understand how we can work in our community. And, you know, food is a unique component of life, needed for our health and survival. Although the need is biological, we select our diet in the context of the social, economic, and cultural environment in which we live. What do we mean by food environment? What foods are available, the kind of food that are available in a given community. Where the foods are available, including issues about transportation and how the people move to get that food. The price of food, also an important part of this concept. And finally, last but not least, advertising and promotion of food is part of this food environment. All these factors influence the choices we make when we go and purchase food. So all these factors taken together are referred as the food environment. The food environment is an important thing that affects everybody, including parents. So, parental modeling is a key factor that affects child food intake and physical activity. The best approach that we have been promoting in our program, Educating Parents, is a positive role model. As we all know, studies have shown that a high degree of parental control equals a low self-control in children. So the positive role modeling, that is what we are enforcing or what we are promoting in our program about educating parents. Okay. What were the realities of the parents that we were working with? You see, after doing some research, we understood that there was a lack of usable information about nutrition. Many parents are busy, stressed, and overworked, usually working two jobs at the same time, making healthy cooking challenges. And cultural legacy foods sometimes, not a rule, but sometimes are unhealthy. We need alternative or substitution strategies. And please, but not last, many parents are not doing the right things. themselves when it comes to physical activity and nutrition. This was the individual parents. Let's see what we found about the environment. This was the reality of the loving school environment, and that is something that we found in our community. Underserved communities lack the healthy food options and safe places to play and exercise compared to more affluent communities. Food marketing and easy availability create a strong desire for unhealthy food. And the cost of healthy food can be a barrier to consumption. So we have about 2 years doing classes for parents in our community, and those classes include nutrition education and cooking classes. Actually, the cooking classes are cooking demo. We have provided them nice cookbooks with easy ideas and healthy. And what we focus in our classes is, besides the other stuff that I talked already, is consuming or eating local and fresh products, local and seasonal fruits and vegetables. And that's a great way in which we address the engaged parents. We notice also that when you invite the parents, they come with the children. And that's an excellent opportunity to teach both parents and children. So that's the way you see. This is a picture of one of the workshops that we provide, a monthly workshop in this community. And we also include some children on the workshop. We also include gardening classes in this. And a wonderful experience that we have had is that we partner with other agencies in the community, so we link together different topics with nutrition. For example, a walk in the park, sometimes we partner with an agency called Wild Care, and they provide like a walk in the trail. And while they're walking, the facilitator finds a raspberry, and that will connect that to nature and to physical activity, to nutrition. And we've been very successful linking other partners. We also partner, or we've been doing some media, like radio and TV. This is, radio and TV are excellent tools to be used to change the food environment. And we have partnered with some radio. This is Marisol Muñoz from Nuestros Niños, a radio program. We have worked together. She has been invited to my classes. I have been invited to talk in a radio show. It airs in the whole day area. She usually talks about health topics. And nutrition is one of the most important topics. Everybody knows this red light right here. And of course, when you talk to children sometimes, probably they won't listen to you, but they will listen to someone like Elmo, right? And if Elmo talks about being physically active and eating more food and vegetables, that's the way to go. there's an initiative in our county from the Novato College Access to do a local similar show. Probably this guy is very popular. This one probably is not. that's a puppet show that the Novato Public Access is trying to do a program and to teach children about cooking healthy. Right? But cooking with their family, that's the goal. Cooking with family and having fun. What are our next steps? We have to continue. We are going to continue with our nutrition and consumer education classes for families. And we are we are currently identifying areas of improvement in the food environment in our community. And we have started to work with families, community agencies, and retail stores to make this improvement happen. The food environment must be changed to facilitate more healthful eating and activity. But the movement to transform the food environment is in its infancy right now. So that's something that for us is also a work in progress. So we're doing the first step. We're taking the first step here by gathering the, bringing the right, the right people to the table. As a conclusion, I can say that creating food environments that motivate and support individuals to follow nutrition recommendations should make it easier to achieve long-term, broad-based improvement in eating trends. And the what we have learned is that community participation is really important. But the challenge is to take the first step, that's what we try to do, and bring the right people to the table. That's my contact information. If you need more information, you can send me an email for me, 724. I would like to say that when there is a will, there is a way. It's a prayer. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin.
So my job on this panel was to be the sleeper and try and say everything that wasn't said. And so I can just stand here and smile and gaze at you for 15 minutes because I think that everything was so beautifully covered by Stacey and Oscar that actually I don't have that much more to add. But as a physician or a health provider, as a primary care health provider, I'm going to try and give you a perspective on this that's a little bit different in terms of how can we make some changes, both perhaps one-on-one with patients, but also much more importantly in the community. And since today has been really focused on systems and looking at holistic ways of making changes, I thought I would start off with this diagram that really shows the different aspects of nutrition and how they surround us as a, let's say, a nuclear family or a community. Everything from the media to the way we are introduced to it in our healthcare system, to farming that we just heard about, to schools and restaurants, public venues, including parks and so on, food stores, packaging. I'm sure I've left some things out as well. But these are really all different touch points where we have an opportunity to make a change. And even hospitals and clinics, I'm also including their one-on-one work. So I put this together yesterday evening, and one of the nice things about coming at the end of the day is you get to learn from all the other speakers. And Wayne Dennis actually really inspired me. So I went ahead and changed it to this. Because I really think that this is much more what it looks like. And the interpersonal is the family and the inner is us. And then, you know, all these other different exposures are out there. And eating is somewhere in between. That's the behavior. But as we know, that is just sort of the outcome of all these other changes. But let me start up there in the yellow. And what I'm going to do in the next 12 minutes is talk to you about these various domains for change and put out some ideas that I have, but it's only one idea, and what I'm most interested in is sparking your ideas, because there are many ideas out there for each one of these things. So let's start with labels. There is nowhere that is more overwhelming, as Stacey said, more of a quagmire, more of a frightening event than walking down the aisle of your conventional grocery store. I mean, I have patients
what's your excuse, right? You know, and they tell me that they can't even begin to decipher a label. Much less someone who might have an elementary or just high school education. So our labeling system, which is so poorly controlled by the FDA, and which is really all intent to sell products, is not working. And we have to think about how are we going to help our patients navigate this? Well, one way is to get involved in organizations which actually are involved with labeling. The other way is to sort of just tell our patients, you know, what kind of labels they should respect. So these are the kinds of labeling I would like to see. That's not too complicated, is it? And, you know, what I started doing is keeping packages in my office or examples in my office so that same way that nutritionists used to, but really just like telling people what food is. Everyone would see this is real food and this isn't real food, okay? And it can make it very, very simple. So this is something that was put out recently. Has anybody seen this? It's a new program we can by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, funded by our government. Wonderful idea, because apparently these kinds of things work with people. You can tell them what are go foods, slow foods, and world foods. And, you know, we found that this works with asthma. You know, you can tell patients when they're in the green zone, the yellow zone, the red zone. These kinds of simplistic education things really work. I'm sorry if I'm bouncing around back today. I don't do well behind podiums. I usually pace. Anyhow. So this is a new system that's been put out, very inspirational for a lot of schools. They've adopted it. It's made its way into a lot of different legislation and so on. Now, this kind of makes sense, okay, if you have this as go. Ah! What did I do? I just told it. That's it. Ah! So I will keep on talking while David's going to stay with me here. So, you know, go foods on the bottom. That's perfect. That's a good one. Yeah.
You want a bathroom?
Okay. So, go foods on the bottom, you know, slow foods. Maybe you want to eat a little less of the turkey than the fruits and vegetables, the full fat yogurt. So, you know, find that you don't want to eat as much of the full fat yogurt as you're eating of the other two things. Well, unfortunately, this is what that has. If you read that document, these are what are in the go, slow, and lows, okay? So we need to start to create our own food pyramid for our patients. The same way we have food and no food, you know, you sit there and you talk to your patients, just get the list of foods they like to eat, and you can help them construct their own personalized food pyramid. And that's something that I get very excited about doing. But, they, you know, once again, if you want to get involved on a larger level, go tell the folks at National Lung, Heart, and Blood that they have it wrong. But, you know, you don't need a degree in nutrition to know that this is not right, okay? And I'm not sure how these things happen. Stacy can tell us later. She's out there fighting this, too. So this is another study just published at Yale. Who's seen this study? Okay, well, this study is exactly what Oscar just told us. It turns out that if you have a cartoon character on your food and you're a kid, you're going to like it more even if it's the exact same food, okay? It doesn't matter if it's a bag of carrots, it doesn't matter if it's a graham cracker, it doesn't matter if it's gummy fruit. So the product industry has decided, I will just put cartoon characters on everything and that's how I will sell food. I personally decided you can just not let kids watch cartoons. But, you know, I'm putting it out there as this other idea, and I'm going to let you guys respond to it and think about it. So once again, wherever you do your work, wherever you do your advocacy, or do you just paste cartoon characters all over your office with healthy foods? I don't know what the answer is. So. Menu labels. Another good new experiment. And actually, there are some studies out both in New York and in Washington State. And here is the results of the one in Washington State, which I actually personally believe is a little better study because it was just it was controlled for menu price, which is important. Because if you're spending more on your food, chances are you're slightly more educated, chances are that maybe you're eating lower calorie meals and so on.
So what this did show, controlling for price, and I don't want to push the scary button again. Which one was that that I pushed? Okay.
Oh, no, I did it again.
Okay, so cancer, if you see that, would you okay. I'm sorry, I'm a little confused here. Not only am I stuck behind a podium, but I have a dysfunctional pointer. So you can see that there was up to a 50% reduction in calorie consumption in some of these cases. Now, if you're going out and getting your 2,000 calorie meal, and that's actually pretty significant all of a sudden. You know, we're talking a decrease of 1,000 calories per day. Now, if you're extremely obese, I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make, and we don't have the data yet to see exactly what the outcomes are in terms of weight, but this is kind of interesting stuff and kind of promising. It inspired me enough to approach our local tea room and get her to put one of my food items on the menu, and she's actually told me that it's become a very popular item. So I'll share it with you later if you're interested. So this is the second part of that study, and this is a little bit more sobering. And that is that you see that a lot more people understand the information from the menu they bring than those who actually change their behavior or chose lower calories. So just that is sort of the part two of this. Food scores. Oscar just talked about this. Another wonderful opportunity for change. If you go into a lot of the food stores in the neighborhood where Oscar works, which is a very, very low-income area within Marin in the Canal District, or if you go into the Mission or parts of Berkeley or Oakland where I live, this is what greets you at the front door. If it's not the cigarettes and the alcohol, it's this. And what, you know, traditionally used to be there and what you should be seeing is this. So another opportunity just in terms of arranging things. So I'm going to talk about farming, and this is kind of selfish because as you can see, that's me on the tractor. I just spent some time on a farm, and there's probably no better way as a health provider, as Stacy will tell you, to get to understand this stuff than to do it all yourself. And I actually did an internship at a biodynamic farm for a couple of weeks in eastern Washington and learned more than I did in 4 years of medical school. But anyhow, this is actually learned more about medicine than I did in 4 years of medical school. But connecting people with their local farms is obviously a huge part of this. This is the Berkeley Farmers Market, and this part is actually courtesy of the Berkeley Farmers Market. Here is a farmers market where people from many different backgrounds, both cultural, socioeconomic, come together to buy food, where you can use food stamps and WIC programs to buy food. Now, Berkeley is a total bubble. You have to understand, we don't really exist on planet Earth, but it is a pretty amazing place in terms of that. This is another farm that I visited out in the Snoqualmie, where I work in eastern Washington, and it's Clean Greens. And it brings food down to Seattle, to southern Seattle, to a very low-income, mainly African-American community. And the farmers who grow it on the food on the farm are actually linked with a church there. And it's really quite an amazing program. That's Tom, the farmer. Christine is one of the volunteers in front. And they're loading it on a truck, the greens, to bring it in. There's more to greens. Now, these guys, they don't do it, you know, fancy and prune everything and make it perfect, but they charge a lot less, and they bring it to the farmer's market, and it was amazing. The stuff was gone within an hour. Here, that's Dennis. She's Tom's wife, and little Cy, who's their grandson, who helps work on the farm, and it's a pretty amazing place. This is Spiral Gardens in Berkeley, which is actually one sort of this urban iteration of that. Grows its food right on the corner of MLK and sells it right there. And this is the Mesa program, which I'm sure Oscar is familiar with. It's down in San Jose, where actually people come and will put farmers little boxes and gardens in people's backyard, and they can grow cilantro, and it's really changed other kinds of greens and start to cook more indigenous recipes. I just want to take one last second here to talk about, I'm almost finished with the circle there, I promise, but you have to give me a couple moments for technological failure. So
This is a program now switching over to the healthcare side, which is Healthcare Without Harm. How many of you are familiar with that organization here? Wonderful, wonderful. So this is an organization which in many different respects tries to groom healthcare, but part of their the program is really to bring locally grown food into hospitals themselves and also to bring farmers markets on the hospital grounds. Now, Kaiser is doing a very similar program, and as a matter of fact, Kaiser has a study right now with CHF patients, with congestive heart failure patients, where they're discharging them with a box of vegetables instead of an extra dose of digoxin, and seeing how they do in terms of readmission rates, and it's really, it looks pretty promising. Public venues, and this is something I'm actually very involved in, is just sort of public lands and parks in general, but it turns out that we have millions of visits to public land each year. Way more people go to public lands than go to doctor's offices. So this is a great opportunity to make change. And so just simple things like picking vending machines that sell Coca-Cola and chips out of public parks and substituting in those carrots with the, I don't know, Scooby-Doo on them, can make a difference. And finally, edible education. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this because Stacy did such a great job, but we actually have our first data out from the Edible Schoolyard in Berkeley. This is my son's school. This is Willard School. It's a middle school in Berkeley. This is the actual makeup of Willard School. It's 45% socially disadvantaged, huge range, ethnically, and yet these are some kids working in their garden. This is their worm bin. There they are in the edible schoolyard kitchen. When they actually started to look at outcomes from the edible schoolyard project, and this is partly funded by the Center for Eco Literacy, partly by the Stacey Neese Foundation, but UCSF is involved in this. What they showed was that it really, the kids who had been involved in the program really did have a substantial change both in their behaviors and their knowledge base. So very exciting stuff. I'm going to skip over this because Stacey did such a great job of it. This is a farm school that I was involved in when I was up in Washington. The one thing that I will tell you is that this farmer said to these kids, let's go see what's under that seat. And they went and they looked and they were daikon radishes. And can you imagine getting kids to sit there and eat a spicy daikon radish? Because it was so exciting. They found it under the seat. It's exactly what Stacey was saying. The discovery. And now these kids are going to eat daikon radishes for life. You know? And this I can't show you. It's a great little video of Cy, the grandson on the Queen Bean farm. Now, finally, this is my last slide. And just a reminder, I know there's one person in this slide that looks slightly different than the rest of them. My last project involved traveling around to different cultures and really learning very valuable take-home lessons. And these are from places that still have low rates of obesity and chronic disease that we all suffer from. And the lesson is just so embodied in this picture. This is a family that eats together every evening. Fujiko-san, who's in the back, who's over 70 and swears she still doesn't dye her hair. These okazu, these little meals, you know, and the whole family sits down and eats them together. And there's just, that is really where all of this begins and ends and where we really need to work with our patients. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie, and thank you, Oscar and Stacey. We're going to have some people run around grabbing some questions, so write down your thoughts, questions, comments related to the topics of the speakers. And we have another about 15 minutes or so for questions and discussion. In the interim, if you have just a minute or two, I'll take advantage of just a minute and put a bit of a touch on what Daphne had to say very briefly about taking advantage of our local environment here. And also taking advantage of the movement that Richard Lewis had started. We are working locally in the Bay Area to implement more of a park subscription type program And for people who may be interested in getting active in that or participating in this, you're welcome to come up to Daphne or myself at any time after this. So this question is addressed to Stacy, but I think it could be picked up by any of you all. I can see how kids get into the farm once they've been there, but how do you initially incentivize them to get involved?
You mean to actually attend the program? Or to actually want to go to a farm? Okay.
I think your interpretation would be as good as mine.
Okay, so, well, the interesting thing is that most of the kids in the surrounding area, they are, well, this whole green movement's happening, and these kids are getting it in school. But a lot of these kids, it's a fourth generation Dutch farm, so it's a family farm. So many of these kids came to the farm to see the animals when they were like a year old. So they have a really warm remembrance of that experience. And so now it's an opportunity for them to come back. So when the parents are like, oh, we really want you to check out this program. It's called the Health Farm. And they're like, oh, it's at Adams Farm? Oh, okay, I'll check it out. And then during our stuff year-round. And then during our summer camp programs, we get a lot of, this is the first year we started busing kids out of New York City. And it's, I mean, as you know, there's a huge movement and kids are really into nature and they don't really get it in an urban environment. So it's not such a hard sell because kids, if they want to plant or they want to cook, that's really what we're selling is planting and cooking, not nutrition education. And then we're just being transparent about calling it Health Farm. So when they get there, if it was called the Fun Barn, then they would think they got deep. But it's the Health Farm, so they know that they're going to be eating cool things. They do eat dark chocolate. But, you know, they're not surprised by what they eat at the Health Farm. So I think that's really important with kids. You need to be transparent. You can't surprise them, you know, trick them into doing this.
We're going to bring some other questions in because we have limited time. So instead of everybody getting a chance to comment on all of them. And I want to remind all of you, too, that we have a fantastic final speaker. Please, if you're itching for a stretch, but do come back. For Oscar, how do you make these classes, gardening classes, mandatory for low-income families since many don't go to classes normally to begin with?
Those classes are not mandatory, but voluntary. And we recruit parents from the two biggest elementary schools we have in our community, but the classes are open to any family in the Canal neighborhood.
This one is great. So, hey, Stacy, how can we clone you?
I actually need you to make a comment there because I don't know how many are familiar with the Child Nutrition Act that's on the table right now, which is on the surface a wonderful idea because it really does get at everything we're talking about today in terms of linking schools more with local farms and trying to give more funding to school lunch so that kids can have healthy food throughout the school day, which is something we didn't touch on, but it's also a very important part of this. And so that is something that's really important that's on the table. Unfortunately, the actual dollar amount translates to about 6 cents per meal per child for school lunches, and not terribly much more in terms of actually, you know, the funding per child for the other programs. But it's going to stand for a lot in terms of putting this on the table and saying that our kids need to be exposed to healthier food throughout the day and make it pave the way for more schools to have safety clones. and that's a place where physicians can really get involved is in pushing through. It's right now it's been stalled. I don't know if anybody has been following it, but I'm happy to talk to you more about it if you like.
This one could be for the panel. Sustainable living is time-consuming. Buying, cleaning, shopping, cooking vegetables, nurturing, playing with bathing, clothing children, keeping your house clean with low-impact cleaners, Who does this work? It interferes with the time needed for creativity and work involvement. How should we share this burden?
I'm a start. That's why I love kids, because they would never ask that question. They just kind of do it because it makes a lot of sense. So what I would say is that we have to change the channel, because we're all on the wrong channel. If that question was asked, which I know it's a lot of the parents I deal with, they're completely on the wrong, or they're actually probably watching way too much TV. But I would just say, shut the television off, and you have a lot more time to do things that you can imagine. And then I think the other thing is that, you know, a lot of the parents think it's all about them, the cooking, it's this control thing. But if you involve your kids and you make it more of an activity, I mean, there are so many kids that would actually prefer to cook the meal. I mean, they don't like the way their parents cook. They don't like the way things taste. And, you know, what we do is we have a whole collection of recipes that are kid-tested, and we say, you know, empower the kids, we take them right through it, and on Thursday nights, it's their night to cook. So it doesn't have to be the burden of the family. It should be, okay, you have a family, you have an environment, you have a family, and who's going to do what? Okay, and I honestly, if you tell kids that you're going to separate the garbage and you're going to do recycling, I don't think you're going to have a problem about it. It's just in my experience. So I think what happens is, and I always talk about this, is that I don't have children, and I think that's why I'm so successful with them, because I don't bring any bias to the table. I believe that every kid will succeed. I believe that every child will eat a fruit or vegetable. And if you talk to the parents, the first thing they'll say is, oh, my kid's not going to do that. But, oh, they'll never eat that. And I don't have that attitude. I really believe that every child given the opportunity will eat a vegetable.
If parents are so stressed and that happens, with a changing the school environment would be something that would help them to. In the meantime, what we're doing is providing them ideas, easy ideas, so they can learn at least and taking the first step to this school environment change that we are trying to promote. Some of the ideas we promote is easy recipes, cooking local seasonal fruit and vegetables. This is something that helps them, and when they cook in family, when they have an idea of how to do it, sometimes we do in the workshop, this is not something that we have out of family. We have to do it with them. When you see something, when it's made with you, chances are that it's going to happen. In the past, we were handing information and brochures. But the most effective way is to give the information at the same time we do. We learn by doing, especially our parents in our community. That's what we have learned.
I absolutely agree. One of the panelists earlier talked about green hospitals and how the way she's able to sell them is by explaining that they're also the most cost-effective way of building. And I think it's really the same with all of this. When you change the paradigm and explain to families that this is a way to become a family again, this is a way to make your children smarter and succeed in school, this is a way for you to connect with your partner, your loved ones, to become healthier, to be joyful, to feel good in your skin, then all of a sudden it's not an extra job at the end of the day. It's not that you go to work and then you have the rest of your life or whatever. This all becomes your life. And it really can be very integrated. And I think that's the most important message to give to folks. I know whoever asked that question was being a devil's advocate, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to answer it. So.
Question has been phrase preamble, which I think is a very important thing to think about. Ed asked me, please address the elephant in the room. How do we address the power and profit motives of the Monsantos, the ABMs, the McDonald's, the PepsiCos, and the others in the world? That's what you need, come on.
Well, I actually worked on the dark side. I did public relations for like major food and pharmaceutical companies before I started Health Fund. So I think through education, and I think it's not preaching, it's by doing. So the more we do in our community, people, you're leading and you're showing people a different way. And, you know, you kind of, there is advocacy, there's opportunities on every level. It's in the team, I will tell you, and it's powerful, and it has money, and it's very active in Washington, and there's a lot of people behind it, and it's kind of, I mean, one person can't go up against it. You have to really, you know, if that's a passion, you really want to go after that, you got to get involved in advocacy. But I think the more we educate parents and we understand that when they vote with their fork, you know, people are, what they do is when they go in there, you know, their buying power is being monitored. The same thing with farmers. Like, I work on a farm with farmers, and, you know, we talk about this all the time because health funds are organic, and they're not. And they're not spraying herbicides, but they're certainly, and they're not, you know, I'm not upset by their practices. Would I prefer them to be organic? Absolutely. But this is a fourth-generation farm, and I'm like this girl from New York that shows up, and I'm going to tell these people how to farm. And it's a process, and they watch what happens. And their market had trans fats in their deal goods, and then they started taking our classes. And, you know, Mr. Admiral was upset that the donuts weren't as crunchy as they were before, that they felt like, and they had to source through even California to source, like, the pie crust and all that stuff. But on the East Coast, it's not, so they had to get a different company coming in. But these things can happen, and they can change. And you don't have to beat people over the head about it. You just have to lead by example. And they eventually, like, come around, and they're like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, trans fats cause heart disease, like, smoking causes cancer. Like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, are people still buying their donuts? Absolutely. But, you know, it's those kinds of things where we can make a difference. And you have to make a difference at your local level because that massive machine isn't going away.
Possibly role models have a great influence on people, and that's what we promote, healthy messages and positive role models. Now, seriously, when you do high control degree, that doesn't work sometimes. So when we, in our workshop with the parents, we always spread the positive message. What are the benefits of that, of a healthy behavior, eating more fruits and vegetables, doing more physical activity, what are the benefits? That's what we're promoting, and it's been very successful.
I think that it can happen on a local level and on a larger level. I don't know how many of you have read of some of Vandana Shiva's work. She's an Indian free activist. An amazing woman, and if you want to have, you know, read some uplifting stories, it's worth it to read some of the work that she's done in India and stories she tells around the world. It's just the fact that in the past 7 years, we've increased the number of small farms by 20 to 30%. The fact that words like local or vote with your fork are now not just becoming terms that you say here in the coastal cities, but I was in Louisville yesterday talking at a large, large conference, and many people there did not know who Michael Pollan was, and yet they were coming up and telling me about fresh and local and what they were doing. A lot of them were from little towns around in Kentucky and Cincinnati and were just interested in hearing about the topic. So things are changing, and it's slowly, and yes, the Monsantos are not going to go away. They're like some giant hydra that will just kind of morph to whatever we allow it to be. Oh, if we can be packaging this, if we can buy, you know, the GMO rights for that. But it really, I agree, it's a matter of, you know, finding the positive and continuing to support it. And it will, things are changing.
Yeah, the image I had in mind as I was thinking about this question is that so many of the cypress trees, the redwoods, some of the redwoods are not in the granite, but if you're in the Sierras or if you're taking hikes in the Bay Area and you see some of these trees growing directly into sedimentary rock, granite rock, there's nothing that's going to stop them. they can get through any hard surface and find what they need to nourish themselves. And we can do the same thing, whether it's a small local level or whether it's getting involved in larger advocacy. So, we have about 2 minutes. We'll do one more question and then we'll wrap up. And I like this question because it brings in topics about how we deal with the wide ages of childhood and adolescence. And I think this could be for the group that was addressed to Stacy. Could you describe some of what Health Barn is doing with older kids, particularly adolescents?
So we started young as 3. We call them the seedlings, the 3 to 5 year olds. They're really funny when they come in. And then we have a sprouts program, 5 to 7, and we have a harvesters, 8 to 12. And those are more of our train wrecks. Those are like, those are really hard, but you almost see it if it's not fixed. If some of the issues, like I was saying, the picky eaters and all the sensitivity issues, if they're not really handled at the seedlings level, they don't get better. And then for the adolescents, we have the harvesters. And then we just introduced the teens in the kitchen. So it's the teens in the kitchen program, which is pretty exciting. We learned that because we have 15-year-olds and older that were now wanting to come to Health Barn. And I didn't really want to do a teens program until I knew what it was going to be. And I usually get my ideas from the community. So we're able to teach. They'll come because it's cooking, but of course we're going to teach nutrition too. But it's camouflage, I'm okay. But I mean, we're cooking with whole grains. I mean, there's all different introductions. And I find that what's so exciting about the teens, because they're a new group for me, is that they're so willing and wanting to make healthier choices. Because a lot of these kids, especially the girls, they're not educated on nutrition. They want to be thin. They just stop eating, or they pick up bad habits from other kids. There's lots of boys. I've had these unbelievable athletes that get referred to me because they're going pro hockey and they don't want to eat. So it's food is fuel, and you just have to basically. I have a sports nutrition workshop, so I'm customizing it for my audience. So I get the sports crowd in there too, eat pregame versus the day you're. There's game day and there's like workout day. I have all this stuff. But essentially it's the same message, and it's just how you deliver it, because you'll lose on them. I know nutrition can be, so different, but delivery and making it fun and relevant is so important. And sometimes, especially as health professionals, we're so used to talking to each other that we forget who we're talking to, and you have to be aware if you're going to get them to glaze over or not, and kind of how to bring it back. But I think the most important thing with nutrition is you never teach nutrition without eating. And if you know anything about nutrition in schools, they don't have food. I mean, and I hear, oh, it's costly, and it's a pain in the butt. It's flat, prep, and I'm like, whatever. Even our assembly is like, all of us, we bring in food. We bring in food, and it's a huge giant cocktail party for kids, and Whole Foods gives us the food for this. I get such resistance. Like, well, what about allergies? And nah. But then you get those parents in there. You got to get these champion parents that really make it happen. Because there are parents, there are principals. I mean, they're starting. They're not a ton of them. But once you get those people and you get those sparks, you can really make inroads where you need to do it.
Thanks, Susan. And thanks, Dr. and Beth. So, you guys have been very patient. For 5 to 10 seconds, they said everybody just stand up, take a quick breather, a stretch in any way you like. How about that?
Okay, as you're getting settled back in your chair,